Good evening and welcome to Fighting Crime, Discussing Solutions to Crime and Violence. This is the third in a six-part series. I'm your host, Scott LaRocque Headley. As part of the Fighting Crime conversation, we have featured a variety of contributors, including youth workers, criminologists, researchers, artists, and other individuals from relevant areas of work. Throughout the series, and this evening, you will hear the voices of certain individuals who have volunteered to share their personal experiences from the perspective of knowing what goes on in the world of crime and violence. One of the earlier guests, on Fighting Crime, Shamar Bernard, who spoke about his reintegration into society following a prison sentence and wanting to further contribute to the discussion, took to the streets for some of these views. Our inclusion of these voices is not intended to glorify a lifestyle or acts of crime and violence. Rather, within the broader context of the topic at hand, Fighting Crime, Discussing Solutions to Crime and Violence, we hope that hearing varying perspectives will further assist in understanding the issues and discussing meaningful solutions. The content in such instances may be inappropriate for children, and parental guidance is advised.
Good afternoon.
Well, I found a way how to finance my own life through marijuana sales, and for that I've been able to pay my own rent, support my family. I've created other avenues of business through marijuana, which are legal businesses that I am creating through the sale of marijuana. And that has been helping my family to create better situations for themselves. And my son, he would go off to college one day. I have these things in my heart for my son, the same very way. I have a way where I can create a business for myself and make profits. I help a lot of people in the communities. Because what I see is a lot of rich people don't recognize the amount of things you have to give away in the ghetto. In the ghetto, you have so many different people to feed. So many different families want a $5, $10, somebody want a bread, some child in the past and that don't have something there.
So you would say that poverty is one of the main factors that push you to step into the life of crime or selling drugs?
Because the business world and the opportunities out there are not much, you know. It's like you have a person, some people may be skilled in carpentry, some people may be skilled in masonry, but a person may know how to make a profit from a dollar. How to have 10 cents and make 10 cents into 15 cents. If you're disciplined with these things, you can make yourself bigger one day with these things. It's the same business as any other business. It is a way people sell flour by the pound. You're selling, taking a product that you take a seed from that. You spiritually, Rastafari has played a major role also in Barbados. And marijuana has been used as a spiritual blessing for people with anxiety, people have all kinds of reasons to use marijuana. So me selling marijuana, I help. It is a good thing for me because I don't see it as crack cocaine. I don't see it as those other high-end drugs. But it's needed for me to support my family. It is a breadline for most people within my circle. So many businesses have been formed from marijuana through my life, things I have seen for myself to put a man on a different level. But I don't like the way how to charge people for selling marijuana. It isn't right for a man to go to a court and pay thousands of dollars and fines and charges over the years to sell marijuana. Now you're saying for your own self that the other European countries and Northern America, they're opening up different farms and avenues of business through marijuana. They're making all sorts of products with marijuana. But here in Barbados, it's still scrutinized. So it may look like a criminal, but I don't see that as a criminal activity. I see it as an activity where a man can produce for his family without going to go in somebody's house or steal. It's like Akis, it's like any other thing out there.
So what would you say, how do you feel about the crime level right now in Barbados and the heightened crime, the gang violence and stuff like that?
Listening to other people cry when they kind of smoke and need something to buy, it is the opportunities. There's not much opportunities of business or creativity for the youths to have different avenues to make money. So it puts pressure on a family to know that you don't have this. You have a household in these neighborhoods with 3 and 4 children. Some have 4 and 5. There's a brother, a sister, uncle. And you're seeing and you're knowing that the bills ain't being paid. There's nothing going on for your little sister. But you're seeing she need necessities like pads. These simple things are in the ghetto. A young girl may don't have pads. And a brother could see that. He may say and tell himself, he may not take up a gun, but he may go through somebody's house because he's studying that. He mother or your brother may need these things. There's also an influx of pills and different forms of Western drugs entering the country, which I I don't even feel the poor man have any really much control over, but these things are influencing the behavior, and that is causing the pressure to look like marijuana is the cause or whatever, a lot of the crimes or whatever, but these behaviors are far from foreign drugs that I wouldn't want to sell, because as I say, my feelings for marijuana is more spiritual and business than to create havoc in the community amongst the youths or the people. But
so what would you, if you had to give a solution or a way to help combat the crime right now, the hurricane crime in Barbados, what advice would you give to the government or to the broader society?
I would ask that some of the problems of like charges for marijuana be uplifted. Even for the average man who want to plant a marijuana in his own yard or on his own personal land, should be given the chance to plant his own marijuana, to sell his own marijuana, even given the chance to sell these things abroad to other countries, because it can't just be one base. I believe we could open an avenue that the average poor man could grow his own marijuana in his yard. He may have the best in the world when it's done. Through breeding, we are all talented, wise people here in Barbados, and open up different avenues in the marijuana market, the different forms of sales, the cannabis, the hemp bags, the materials.
That would bring a decrease in crime, because really marijuana.
They're creating more business in the world.
Business, creating a more business atmosphere.
Allowing the youngsters to go into these same plantations, these same farms. All of these things that are being designed just for a small amount of people. This is how we're seeing it at present. The richer people are going to own these companies, and then they're going to have a few people working at these companies. When there are so many other avenues and ways to plant the same very marijuana, saying like, I may have a half acre of land, I may have 2 acres of land. I want to plant it and sell it and sell it to the Western Hemisphere and the European markets. The same very way.
Which will provide jobs for
jobs for a lot of the same people and young people that within the ghettos.
Okay, so what is your feeling about the guns now? The way that the young people have started to, operate with the guns, the whole gun violence.
The gun violence for me is a problem. Drugs and guns don't work. The ports are going to be searched even more because of the guns. The airports are going to be searched even more because of the guns. And that caused problems. Nobody don't want to come to a community where there's lots of violence. So that stopped me from getting sales. Nobody wants to be involved in a simple sale because of the guns. So it's causing problems and havoc for me too. I believe that this mentality with the youths about the guns, they need to remember that where we come from, their history, they know that we are loving people. We are not people that want to kill our own brothers. We are not people that want to destroy families around you. You want to have a loving community. But this gun thing, this is a problem for me too. I don't like it because it stops business. It's not good for business. It's not good for people in the communities, the young people. The younger people seeing the influence from the Western behaviors or some. The internet works good for me, and I see, and they're looking at these things as a broad spectrum of why this gun violence is a problem. Because they still listening to the youths, listening to a lot of gun violence, not fully understanding that the gun music, how it's supposed to be used. They're taking it into the streets. They're not understanding that it's just like a cop fight or a basketball game. Two people can have that rush of anger or challenging one another. I see the music as a challenge. I don't just see it as, well, because your favorite artist is singing a gun tune, that you have to behave in the same very way. You have to take your violence into what you love. If you're a carpenter, be a carpenter and be the best. So it's like that. That for me, that's how artists see their music. I could be the best with my music in this way. I could use it in gun way. I could use it in girl way. So I don't feel the music is really even the influence too much on the crime and the violence. I just believe that the young people, family-based structures, it's fairly hard right now. The opportunities with the work, those are hard also. And the average poor man can't really get to buy a gun from overseas, so these problems are a little bigger than me.
Thanks for your views and voicing your views on the matter.
Guidance and respect.
An interview with one of our earlier panelists, Shamar Bernard, who took to the streets and spoke to certain individuals who have volunteered to share their personal experiences from the perspective of knowing what goes on in the world of crime and violence. We want to emphasize that the inclusion of these voices is not intended to glorify a lifestyle or acts of crime and violence. Rather, within the broader context of the topic at hand, fighting crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence, we hope that hearing varying perspectives will further assist in understanding the issues and discussing meaningful solutions. Once again, welcome to this, our third episode in this six-part series. In studio with me today is my co-host, Melissa Savory Gittins. How are you doing, Melissa?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I am good. Nice to meet you.
Same here.
All right. Tell me a little bit about yourself quickly.
I'm a everything person. So I get involved in community, get my hands dirty, like to help out, make sure everything is nice and dandy.
Nice and dandy.
Yeah. That's it in a nutshell.
All right, cool. It's nice to see another young face across the console from me. I think we will have a very interesting discussion this evening. You've also brought along a very interesting panel. We have Dr. Tressanne Krimmer. She is recently appointed as director of the Institute of Criminal Justice and Security. We also have Mrs. Sandra Field Kelman, an educator with over 40 years experience, and Miss Allison Aline, who is a mother. Allison has been through the system, a past student of the Government Industrial School, a child and domestic abuse survivor as well. She has decided to change her life and is now a successful businesswoman and a single mother of two beautiful girls. All female panel.
All female. That was intentional.
I see. I'm the odd one out.
Women power this evening.
Women power.
Yes.
Interesting. All right, let's get down to business.
Get down to business. So recently we had some crimes against women. We heard about the fire victims. We heard about the woman who was found dead naked, and sexual harassment coming to Barbados and that kind of stuff. So I decided, you know what? Let's talk about women. Women commit crime too.
It's true.
They might not be involved in all the gunplay that you hear about, but women commit crime. And men are sometimes, you know, the receivers of this, but men like to keep quiet. You know, the shame, they want boys to know that, you know, that
a woman
beating them or, you know, that kind of stuff. So this evening, we want to talk about crime against women, women who commit crime. Dr. Tressanne, tell us briefly about your work leading up to your recent appointment as the director of UWE, Institute for Criminal Justice and Security, and what the stats show concerning women and the kind of crimes they commit.
Thank you, Melissa, and I'm pleased to have been invited to this panel, and I want to congratulate yourselves for starting this series of discussion on crime in the Caribbean, and particularly for focusing today more so on how women contribute to crime and how possibly they could even be changing agents to help us to address that. My role before being appointed as director of the Institute for Criminal Justice and Security at the University of the West Indies was as the head of Good Offices for Peace at the Commonwealth Secretariat and the lead political advisor for the Caribbean region. And in that role, I played the part of trying to connect all the multi-sectoral dots in the governance sphere, so rule of law, human rights, and politics, increasing and enhancing governance. That's my background at that role. In terms of my work on women and crime, my PhD was focused on drug trafficking, particularly foreign national women prisoners in the United Kingdom. And at that time, some years ago, the United Kingdom was seeing an influx of women offenders and imprisonment there. So that's how I got into really studying the input of interventions and their social efforts to stymie and prevent crime committed by women. In Barbados and the Caribbean at the moment, what are the types of crime committed by women? We see domestic violence also committed by women. We see it the other way around, of course, committed against women more so. We also see crimes against children, children in domestic abuse situation, which also contributes to that side of crime. And we also see women also perpetrating crimes by not reporting and also sometimes covering for their own children, who may also be involved in crime. There is also the scholarship around this is that women are motivated to crime, particularly where they are placed in situations where they have to provide for their families without any support. And that sometimes pushed them into that situation. And that was the case where women sometimes are involved in sex work, and also where they are involved in issues like drug trafficking. And sometimes they are trafficked to themselves.
Thank you very much for that. So I'm going to jump straight in from that conversation into Miss Allison. Because Allison is here because she has committed crime. So we have brought her to talk about the crime that she has committed and how she can tell us some solutions and how others don't end up like her, or better yet, end up like her, changing their lives around and becoming good members of our society. Mm-hmm. So Allison, over to you.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having me. When you say committing crime, I'm such a hard criminal that you might take, you know. But most of my crime was in my younger years, I think it's because of peer pressure and certain circumstances that would have made me done certain things. One of the turning points was when I did an early childhood course because I have two daughters. And when I did that course, it made me realize that things that we live in and doing every day that we thought were normal, example being in an abusive relationship, call your boyfriend selling weed or that kind of thing, because that the things that you're accustomed to, when they get in that course and they realize, wait, I get abused, wait, there's the honeymoon stage, wait, my daughter behaving a certain way because of the violence she's seeing at home. And to me, that was a pivot for me. So that curb be crying a little bit.
Very good. So in terms of one of your solutions right here off the bat already is the early childhood course that you have taken. Yeah. So you think that really helped to change your life?
Well, yeah, it started, I think that there's a lot of needle point turns, but that was one that really opened my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to do the course because I had two young daughters at the point, how to maneuver with these two girls, because my big daughter, Khadijah, hello, she was like 5. Before she was 3, she got sent home from about 3 different daycares. And it was like,
before she was 3?
Tell me about it.
What?
All right, little backtrack now. So it was the all-beige, John Hardy's girl. Mm-hmm. You run away a girl and da-da-da-da-da. So you can't even have environment now. Oh, you got two girls, so you better check yourself. God, I ain't gonna get better job that. And saying to me, just know this is not what you want for my children. This is what you want for myself. So I started to, after doing course, and I realized people keep telling me, oh, you hard ears. When you tell the 3-year-old she hard ears, be basically glorifying it. So you think she gonna do at hard ears? If she's seeing music videos and she's walking at me, oh, look at you walking at you, just like your mother. What you think she gonna do? So you had to be like, stop, don't tell her that. And eventually move away from environments that putting them thoughts in she head. Mm-hmm. I started to make her environment safe. And from dealing with Khadijah, who was 5 and now she's 14, I learned how to deal with Anelia, who is now, she can almost be 9. Mm-hmm. And looking at them, raising them, and looking at how I was then, to me, that is a huge success within itself. Sometimes they think that I'm failing, but when they look at how them behaving, you know, I saw something yesterday about a 15-year-old girl that cursing she mother and doing the most and the mother put in jail and she ain't know what to do. My Khadijah? Oh, my Khadijah. Khadijah, no. All right. No, I guess.
All right. We'll come back to you.
Hey, thanks.
We're going to move to Sandy. Sandy Fields Kelman, welcome to the program. You're muted. Kindly unmute for us. Okay, why Sandy is getting on mute. Dr. Kramer, I know you came this evening with some solutions to crime, and I know your work over the years would have led you in that direction and all the stuff that you have been doing. Tell us about some of the solutions that you have started to implement in some of the other Caribbean countries and what you would like to implement here in Barbados.
what you would like to implement here.
Okay, thank you so much for that introduction and providing me with that segue. If you think about crime and issues of security and also justice, it is an ecosystem. So crime doesn't exist by itself. It is a behavioral reaction, and then there's a whole ecosystem that where that action is plugged in. And that ecosystem consists of the family, it consists of the community, but it also consists of organs of the state, such as the police, the prison, the judiciary, and other interventions, you know, the private sector, social interventions, and also interventions by the one of your guests said she was, you know, she came through a state intervention system. So this ecosystem needs to be working effectively and efficiently if we are to see constructive and balanced and continuous sustained reduction in crime in our communities. But how do we go about that? And I've listened to some of the discussions that you have had previously. And how you tie those things together is that while you have different programs and approaches in different ministries, under different paradigms, you really need to have monitoring and evaluation of all of these so that they are working towards the same end. And that would take into interventions such as education. And I know your guests will probably speak a lot to that. You also have to look into gangs. How are those formed and how can you minimize that? And why do people join gangs? To get that sort of information, it's not just doing an intervention and going out there and talking with the young men and sometimes women who join. You need to do the proper data collection, victimization surveys, and some of what you are doing here in terms of having some of those young persons and individuals tell you what motivates them into crime and use that data to provide that kind of intervention. So that is where the Institute of Criminal Justice and Security would also provide that support to the Caribbean region in terms of prevention. But if you look at also the prison model, if you take an approach where it is just informed at punishment, that is probably an appropriate emotional response. But practically, when someone is released, if the prison service system has not worked for them, and if the prison system itself is not functional, the prison system itself becomes a gang, and it becomes a territory of organized crime. So that also needs to be addressed and needs to be monitored and evaluated very properly. And you need persons who have integrity to oversight these institutions and who understand what models of integrity mean. So when the government passes an integrity act, that also needs to be plugged into the system as to how that is working to prevent corruption, crime, and that those in charge of monitoring these institutions work. The judiciary. If your society is not confident that they will get justice, then they will rent a gun to commit a crime, to get justice themselves. And you will have individuals who are willing, because they probably don't have access to the labor market, who are willing to do that sort of work, albeit against the law. So all of these things need to be tied together in the ecosystem, and perhaps it seems like a lot, but it really has to be done. And so a really focused society will probably look at how they can create a pilot that looks at linking all of these systems and then scaling it outwards and upwards to form a solution.
So the institute is looking. So basically you're saying then that instead of having the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of this and the next and the third, we need one system that's going to link all of these different organizations and institutions together and then push the solutions out there from one centralized place.
Absolutely. So what exactly, how is each institution and how is each intervention from the education side? You have children, there are some sometimes a report some time ago, some years ago, spoke to gangs recruiting children in schools. Mm-hmm. How does the school system work within the with other institutions to prevent something like that happening? Okay. How does the prison work to rehabilitate, right, and so on?
Go ahead, finish up. Go ahead.
And since we're talking about women, mm-hmm, and we know the role that women play in our society in terms of sometimes being the so-called head of the household in many instances, how do we recognize that in itself is very taxing? It creates a very burdensome situation sometimes in households. But how the agency of that woman and women can also be used powerfully within communities, because some of these mothers and women know exactly what's happening and what their offsprings are doing. So if that some sort of support and awareness can be used to channel that agency, mm-hmm, to also prevent crime, that can be very effective. And we're looking at that in some Caribbean countries in the form of restorative justice.
Okay, wonderful. All right, so folks out there, you can join the conversation by calling us at 434-1790 or
folks out there, you can join
266-IVOB or 266-4862. So join the conversation, call in, let us know what you're thinking, let us know about your thoughts and any solutions you may have. I'm going to jump right over to Sandy. Sandy.
Hi, good evening.
Speaking concerning education and the role that education plays out there, can you tell us about the education system in Barbados and what your thoughts of the solutions that we can help put in place to get youth? We believe that education has its part to play. And if we have children out there who are illiterate, they don't know what, they can't read, they can't write, they're going to turn to some other form of or fashion. Tell us about that.
Okay, good evening, panel, and thanks for having me on this very relevant point. Yes, I want to speak holistically to this issue, not necessarily only to women. I agree with Ms. Kramer that women rock the cradle all over the world. So the women have really an important part to play. But for me, however, I want to go to the root in that I think the home, the family, the community, the church, the school, the persons that you see day to day, whether it's adults or teenagers, all have a part to play. Now, things like gun crime and all that type of thing, everything starts, panel, in the home. But if you don't have a home that can really pass on and inculcate those values to the child or the children, I think the community, and right now the community places are all closed, the churches are all closed, the community does not pick up the slack. So, hey, the children then get up to mischief. They look for love then on the block. And from the block, they move to other things. I want to agree with the guy, I think Bernard, that spoke first. I do agree that there are areas in marijuana that can be used as a business because it's all over the world. And I disagree, though, with the fact that using things like the tablets and so on, I think that is a no-no because a lot of these tablets have a lot of things in them. But I do agree with him that there is a place for marijuana businesses in this country. However, for me, I think that if a child is not reared holistically, and this has nothing to do where the child lives, where the child comes from. Now, if a mother, as the lady spoke just about her two daughters, mm-hmm, whether Allison did early childhood program or not, I really do think that training starts in the incubator. Incubator meaning from down in the crib, as that child comes along, there are certain tools and artillery that child needs to have. Now, remember, our educational system does not necessarily cater to all these other things. We focus mainly on academics. Mm-hmm. They're now looking at reform education. But I really do think, yes, it's a good thing we are doing that now. And I really hope that really happens sooner, like ASAP. Because if a child is growing up in a home There are certain fundamental skills that child needs to know. Okay, you need to have a certain type of discipline, mm-hmm. a certain mm-hmm. type of training. There are things at home, yes, your mother might not be able to read, mm-hmm. but I'm sure that there are people in the neighborhood who can help. This is where community comes in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the problems panel starts from illiteracy. Mm-hmm. When you cannot read or write mm-hmm. from 5 and 6 years old, and I'm speaking from my own, in my own teaching career, I'm not really, I'm just to correct thing, I'm not, have not been teaching 40 years as yet. I'm not that aged yet. It's only 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm saying from my normal day-to-day teaching, when I teach children who are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and they cannot read, all of those issues lead to children going to do things that are mischievous. And it starts down in the cradle, as I said, 5, 6 years old. So if that child does not know how to knit, crochet, stamp, collect, do things like communicate with their parent is, as Allison said, the parent is saying, you're idiot, you're foolish, you're hard ears, and you glorify that thinking, that child really believes, you know, I'm really an idiot. And that child lives to that thinking. Whereas in the home, if it's not the home, the church, the community, the school, we need to inculcate what you call a certain amount of social interactive skills to our young people. All right. And I'm not really seeing this happening a lot, because a lot of the children I teach, I myself have to teach them those interpersonal skills and those fundamental skills, where those children really should have gotten those skills either from home or at school.
But Sandy, how do I, as a parent, that I don't myself, I ain't got them skills. I just happen to have a child because, you know, you ain't being mischievous and I get pregnant and I get a child.
Mischievous.
But how do I don't have those skills? So how do I pass on something to my child that I don't have?
That is where, again, as Ms. Kramer said, agencies, and we cannot sit and depend on a government. I am not one that believes everything government must do. Government, what government needs to do is to take up the idea and roll it out. Okay, so if you have, for instance, I work with a lot of parents who did not and who were not fortunate to have certain skills. And you know what? I always encourage them to go somewhere, find an agency. And this is where community centers need to come back and play an important role, where people like us can come and lend our skills. So there are lots of parents panel that don't have no skills at all. As you say, all they did was really, let me put it blank, lie down and have the child. All right? They don't even know sometimes how to even make the milk. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying this is where Brothers Keepers come in. Mm-hmm. And I am not seeing that being played out in a lot of our agencies. We have things like Paradox. Are these agencies playing that part? Is the ministry taking up these skills? I have offered my knowledge to things like the ministry and agencies, so much so I am so kind of like tired waiting. I'm going to do it on my own.
Very good.
I'm going to do my own agency, voluntary agency, where I have maybe 40 or 45 volunteers mm-hmm. to come on board to help children in different neighborhoods.
Right.
And we have targeted certain neighborhoods where we know that these mothers, who really are the rockers of the crib, don't know how to rock the crib. Okay, and at 5 and 6 years old, those children are displaying and showing signs of down the road. It's written on their forehead, 14 or 15, they get into trouble. Mm-hmm. And just to share with y'all, I teach right now guys who came out of prison, okay, who are now rehabbing. And when I hear their stories, you know what they always tell, the synopsis of the story is, you know, ma'am, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I did not know how to read. The cat is on the mat. My mother never glorified me and told me encouraging things. But here you know, and these are boys now 17 and 18 who are now learning to read because they're having a second chance at life. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line of it is really illiteracy.
Right.
Okay. And our literacy rate, when I was a girl growing up, mm-hmm. my parents told me it was 99%. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere near their panel.
How much is it
it's
now?
Nowhere near.
How much is it?
It is really, it's like 65, and that's poor. Right. Okay, mm-hmm. For a country like Barbados, we should not be rating as that. And I did my own survey and my own research because I teach literacy. That's what I do for a living.
So, go ahead, finish up, and then I'll ask the question. Go ahead.
So I'm saying that for me, I like to go back to the root cause. I don't want to put on the band-aid. The root cause is right now in our country, our little 40 by 21, we have neighborhoods, we have women and men too, but we didn't deal with women now because it's mainly the rockers of the creek. We need to get persons who are passionate, who care, who really want to help these women, because the children that they are raising, who are boys, most of them, are the men of tomorrow. Okay, and if we do not equip those boys with the skills that they need to know now, and mothers make those boys understand, yes, you have to learn how to wash wares. Yes, you have to play outside and you have to sweep. Okay, put and inculcate those skills. Now, if the mother, as I said, does not know, rehear and other persons in this country, Barbados, who say they want to help. I don't see them. I have mine. Okay, because I'm doing advocacy to get people on my board.
Right.
But I'm saying it's all well and good, panel, to say, oh, we need to do this. We need to get this agency to do that. But I'm hearing so much lip service and so much talk, but I'm not seeing the fruits. I would really like to know out of all these agencies in Barbados who have been talking, not necessarily about fighting crime, but things to do with that. What are the statistics now, if the statistics have gotten better, mm-hmm. or if they're still at stage one?
Okay. All right, Dr. Tressan. Are you there?
Yeah.
So Sandy's knocking. Well, I don't want to say quite knocking, but she's saying all these agencies and all these things, you know, waste of time. What do you say about that?
Well, at the end of the day, the state has a responsibility has certain responsibilities in governance. So advocacy and social interventions outside of the paradigm of the state also has its role. But everybody should not be pulling away from each other. Everybody can work together. And so while Ms. Sanderson, is that the name? Sorry if I had it wrong.
Sandy.
Also, Sandy does her advocacy. That also contributes and should effectively and efficiently complement the foundational efforts of the state. And why is this important? It's important because participation in democracy and building trust citizens' trust in democracy and in the power of the state is also has an influence on crime. If young men who are at risk feel that the state's reach has been diminished, then the deterrence for crime increases. So everybody have to pull together to work. Sandy mentioned one issue, which is illiteracy, but there are others too. And another one I'd like to mention is or inability to resolve conflict amicably and agreeably. And for it's one of the biggest issues of crime in Barbados is the homicide rate. And if you look at that, what it says then is that crime perhaps is being committed for reasons. People may feel you have harmed me, it may be a gang issue, or for whatever reasons, things are not being talked out and discussed. That is an issue, and it's not only in Barbados, more so in other Caribbean countries such as Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, where this issue of conflict resolution needs to be faced head on. Okay. At the University of the West Indies, we are launching a restorative justice program. We have done so with Jamaica, and we would very much like to work with Barbados in rolling out a program on restorative justice and also mediation. Two very important arms, the youth and women, could be drawn in to such interventions at the community level, even in interventions such as Sandy Speak, so that you're not only doing a one-pronged approach, but everything can be integrated. Restorative justice and how we resolve conflicts amicably is very important. The only instance where, for example, restorative justice would not be appropriate is in the rates and use of domestic violence, because that situation is where there is unequal power and it wouldn't be appropriate there. But the ability to resolve conflicts amicably is also a cause of crime. And we also need to look into why we're not doing that anymore. And it probably goes down to as the structure of our family.
Melissa, don't you think that a part of the problem with the institutions which Sandy was referring to is their approach to sharing the information and the knowledge that they have? Like, they still do the same thing, the same old way they used to do it 20 years ago. Times have changed.
I think, too, that everybody wants to have their own glory. That's the next problem. Because we have lots of organizations out there that do a lot of the same things. But I don't want to work with you, because I want to get the glory for doing what I'm doing. Right? So I can do the work and get all the big ups, shout out. Yeah, really? I do this. Right? When everybody come together and work together, it can, you know, make things happen a little bit better.
Right.
I was going to go to Allison, because Dr. Tristan just talked about, she didn't directly say it, but basically the extended family. Because I think a lot of things have changed, because the extended family has now been diminished, basically. Because everybody want to move away from home. You know, before, your grandmother would keep you, and your grandmother can instill certain values and things in you as you come along.
Keep you in line from young.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people would say, my grandmother raised me.
Yeah.
Right? But now, do we have that family support?
You still have it, it's just that the grandmother's a lot younger.
Nah, just get to you. So the grandmother's got a life too.
Exactly.
The grandmother's still active. So in my situation, I had to revolve my life around my children. So I had to find a skill that can maintain me, maintain my household, and still maintain my kids. My mom has a small business as well. So to get them, like, glad that I get to a certain age, you know, that, you know. But
they have themselves.
Yeah, not, you know, but... But before, it was difficult. It was difficult getting them keep, because they're girls and they didn't want nobody keep them. That's our way.
Right, because of what you would have obviously experienced for yourself.
Yeah. But,
so the extended family really helped. Didn't it really, you know, because like you said, the grandmothers are a lot younger. So then where do we turn? The grandmothers younger. Go ahead, Dr. Tressa, I'm listening.
As we mentioned, the extended family, and we look at 21st century situation, we're not just talking about familial bonds or the community. We're also talking about the impact of social media and how that plays its role for some young people at the moment as a form of extended family. Most young people in the Caribbean have a mobile phone, a smartphone, and they have continued and persistent discussions online. That has become a medium of family for lots of young persons, and depends of the pockets of conversations that happen in those spaces also have an impact in the type of associations that happen. And that is another aspect that we also need to research.
And I'm glad the you language said that. I'm glad you said that, because the block is not the family. Because when they go on the block, the guys can big me up. They can make me feel.
They can show you love.
They can show me love. They can give me all the things that I'm not getting at home. So when somebody come and put a gun in my hand and say, do this, brother, I may be more inclined to do it because I want to stay a part of that family who accept me.
Call that my brother and that
for who I am.
That whole, you know.
Dr. Tressa.
Go ahead, Sandy. Do you know that Castro was able to eliminate illiteracy in Cuba? And those are the things that I'm speaking about. I want to see things tangibly done. In other words, we can speak from now till 2024 and say that we should advocate for this and, you know, do this and this agency. But I want to see it actually a change, if you understand what I'm saying. I don't know when I teach my young children, when they are 6 and 7, in about 6 months, I get a report saying, well, Melissa has done this jump from this mark to that mark. That's what I want to see, results. So my beef is that a lot of these things I quite agree with, and I really commend Allison for making, you know, having that great vision and turning her life around. But there are so many out there, Allison, that you maybe can help maybe two or three more, because each one teach one. Okay, and yes, agencies have rolled out all these policies. I mean, great policies, and I not necessarily with this particular subject. Y'all know what I'm speaking about, and I'm a very straight talker, Miss Kramer. Okay, a straight talker, and the need straight talkers in this country. And maybe we will see maybe the bullet bit. And so I'm saying that a lot of policies are rolled out in a country, but guess what? It becomes just a policy. I am here seeing that they litter from the mini buses. You mustn't litter, you mustn't play this kind of music. But guess what? I've called in, had meetings with those people, but the dirty music is still on the mini buses and the young children hearing it. I'm saying in Japan, you cannot throw litter on the ground because those children are born, it's in their DNA. They don't have to police those people. You can't spit gum or chew gum in Singapore. Why? The policy that was put in place was policed, and eventually it became a way of life. Good. I'm gonna use those as analogies. So I want to say, if we are looking at solutions start with each and every one of us here.
Agreed. But Sandy, what do you think? I don't think the police is being paid enough. And so
I don't need police again,
I understand, but I'm just going to that point as well, that police aren't being paid enough, and so it's easy to turn a blind eye to crime.
So it goes back to what I just said. It goes back again to the institution, and because you're not being paid enough to make my pizzas, you're going to give me a sloppy pizza, half cooked, and I have to settle for mediocrity. So right now in Barbados, and I don't feel no way about this, I say what I have to say, because you have to talk the truth. The bottom line of it is, we in Barbados settle for mediocrities. Nobody says, no, I am not accepting this. So our agencies, our government rolls out policies, but guess what? Really nothing, to be honest. I don't see a lot of things happening, and you all have to agree with me. And it's great to have UWE doing this company, Melissa's agency doing that, Headley's agency doing that, Allison's doing, but you know what, is it being done? 20 years from now, we are going to be talking about women rocking the cradle and women can't raise the children, as Allison saying.
Well, Dr. Tressan is new. She's the new director, and I know that Dr. Tressan is, from what I've read and seen for her, I know she's a mover and a shaker, so I am confident that some of the things that she's going to put in place is going to happen and going to roll out. Dr. Tressan?
They need to have people like that in the right, but you see, we have a lot of square pegs in wrong holes in this country, and I don't make no apologies about that. The people really who are passionate, like Miss Kramer, myself, and so on, and others, they don't call us to make and help with the solution.
Is this true?
You know what? It's a fact. You have to be a friend of somebody's. And I don't make no apologies about that.
Right?
Persons who really have the alternative and the suggestion and the solution. And I'm speaking from my years of experience as a school teacher.
And we thank you for that.
All right?
So a question that I had, which was, because Allison, we were talking as we came down earlier, my son bringing home money for me, and I know that it from criminal proceeds, but I ain't working. The bills in your house gotta get paid. So why should I give up my family? Why should I give up my neighbor or somebody who helping the community?
Right.
That's a question.
It's a very good question.
Why should I do that? Remember, folks, you can call us at 434-1790, or you can WhatsApp us at 266-4862, 266-IVOB, to tell us some answers to these questions that we have. Remember, tonight we are looking at solutions. We have about 9 minutes left. Can we get some solutions, some other solutions before we leave? Yes, Allison.
I think persons ain't gonna give up their children because of the environment that I'm in. Most likely a drug lord is selling weed in Heights and Terraces. They're selling it, wrong another drug lord. So they're competing. You understand? So for somebody to see that and want to do something different, it can be hard to pull away from that. They got a pull. They gonna try to pull away from it, but that gravitation gonna pull. They gonna go back to what they know. Right. We see persons in society that try to change their life, and we see them change, and then we see them went back to doing what they know.
Why? Why?
I think because society make it hard for them. They gonna remember them one way, and then no one else.
So then the other question is: are there alternatives accessible to me as a criminal? So when they finish commit crime, how easy is it for me to be reintegrated into society without being as a criminal?
When I first come out of some of the first thing, I kept my mind about becoming some of a girl. So you didn't know I went some of them unless I say I went some of them.
Right.
I decided I ain't carrying on myself that way. You're going to see me with certain girls. You're going to see, I ain't moving that way. Right. I know some that was up there. And all them there, that was up there with me. And I, why they went that way and why you went another way? Because
but it's a mentality thing.
Exactly,
then, right?
I decided I didn't want that for my life, that's the life I want for myself.
So then when the solution start with you as a person, you yourself have to make it up in your mind that this is what I want.
All the programs in the world, all the things, but sometimes you just got to see somebody that do it and really do it. She used to sit outside of me.
It can't be done.
So what happened? She ain't doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. She look normal just like me. But why she ain't doing that anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So I think that it deals with the individual too and the influence that they got around them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the people around you gonna be like, oh, you could get this, oh, you could get that, oh, you just wanna hang your hat too far and da da da. But if I don't hang my hat, how can I reach?
Right.
You know?
So reach for the stars, even if you fall down, a little sharp,
but at least you get further.
Right.
That's interesting, Allison, that earlier when you mentioned your pivot point or the change in time in your life, you didn't mention Somerville.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that actually had a positive impact on your life? Do you think that system worked? Yeah.
Sorry, let me get a little back to Somerville. I was abused from 8 to like 12, and then it started running away because of the abuse.
Yeah.
So if I'm running away, they send you up, some of you get charged with wandering. And I get 3 years when they turn 15. When they turn 15, though, I did come first, I went lodge, and then they come first at school. So the principal sent me down and was like, you're too bright to be safe, because we went there, they're doing like 2 plus 2 is 4 just to waste time.
Right.
Till you get 18 and then go. And he asked, you want to do CXCs and stuff? And I was like, yeah, because that was my ticket out. I do my CXCs. I passed my CXCs. I went BCC. And then the realist way, the girls are here really all that hard. They're just victims of certain things.
Right.
When they come back out, they road again. I ain't learned nothing.
Well.
You understand? It is just like, back then, now I order, I could look back and say that I was just being supervised. I was determined to get out. So he passed all my CXCs. That was the determination. But when they get out, they run. You understand?
Freedom.
You understand?
Yeah.
So I eat good grass, bad grass, all kind of grass. But then I had a point after going through certain things, I realized, like, this ain't what you want for my life. This ain't, I see people that do it. They got people that saying that, people that met success, oh, they had money. I start researching, they got people that start from nothing. And then they start looking at principles that they're doing, like, what they start doing, to start eating better, to start going around better friends, to start reading, and they love to read. So most of these things are going to be in books. The average person don't want to read, they look on the Instagram, or they look on TikTok, and that's what educating people know. So we can got a society that real dumbed down, but you got to see somebody that actually went through it and do it and realize.
You can do it too. And that's why you're here this evening, Allison. That's why we invited you here, so you can let people out there know they can do it too.
Yeah.
But Allison, you sound like somebody who knows. You know the thing. You know
tell
the truth.
And
you would know that a lot of the time, the people who are going through it are really not that willing to listen, to use a word that you said you never used with your children, their hard ears. They're not ready to change yet.
Yeah. It's true. I think that... all that comes with educating myself from doing the childhood course, and I realized, all right, it got back away from certain things. Because we just blame, we're going to see a man and a woman in a relationship, and this body get behind, da-da-da-da-da. You doing left, or you ready to left? They got people that is being, you just got left, but what they done, he like 3 years in my head, and then it took like 5 years for me to really done.
Whoa.
You understand? You just got to, and all that I had to learn, teach myself
along the way.
And the internet there, so don't... you got to want it for yourself. They got ways of learning. It ain't only traditional learning. They got ways of finding out things, but you got to want it for yourself.
So you have to want it, want the change.
Yeah, another question somebody is here is asking is, the boys on the block showing me love. Mm-hmm. You said you hang up on the block?
But they can pass three blocks, but you don't see me saying up on the block. Before I used to line paint block, and they start line paint block because they tell me they're saying down.
But why you line paint block?
Before.
Why? You so feel that love and appreciation?
No, I don't want smoke. You know, can't smoke in my mouth. I cannot smoke in my mother's house, so it's like.
But what
made me check myself is a day to day saying no with the boss, one of the bosses, mm-hmm. and a girl passed and if I was like, so you saw it, she's like, good, yeah. And then you, she's a bear. I never see that girl playing block yet. And me that saying, I'm here, wanna, and you saying that, so what you gonna say when they're gone?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That will make me get up. Mm-hmm. And then they start drifting away from me. You know what I'm saying? Then they start real. Because people gonna see a girl playing block and they say, you, everybody's got she.
She's that, a block girl.
That was not the case.
She belong to the streets.
That was not the case. It's just once my herb and then go back home. My mother can't probably smell, but I bring it in she holds. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But then it really is perspective. People might not always know what's going on the block, but from the time you in a certain environment, they're gonna put a label on you. Mm-hmm. So you had to stop. Be that, you know what I'm saying? Stop, gravitate further from that.
All right, so we have like 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. Your solutions again.
My solutions, I think that they should make some more. Look, my children is almost teenagers now. I think parenting they come in a handbook. I think that they should make it more available to persons. The community centers, they're saying, I'm doing what? Mm-hmm. You know, I've been afraid to come. They should got class, at least have access to them. Don't wait till something happened and then you say, oh,
put the same place. Put the same place.
Okay. This should be saying ongoing, called babies and children growing every day.
Right.
And but when it comes to some of them now, I think that she got a more, but you know how it is now, but she got some kind of personal development. Because when it go, you got to hit the road and you're going to be a some of a girl. How can they combat that?
Right.
A more structured sort of program.
Yeah, you should.
Dr. Tressa, I can see you're anxious. Tell us your solutions.
Thank you. Quickly, I'd just like to reiterate, one, it is important to have a strong ecosystem of crime prevention. So looking through policing, the judiciary, access to justice, and how prison works, etc. So it was important to have at least a pilot that ensures that people have some increased confidence in that system. Two, mainstreaming youth and women as agents of change. And for example, establishing things like youth centers and restorative justice and mediation centers and training and giving women and that sort of support so that they can also be agents of change in their communities and in their own families. Mm-hmm. And three, I'd like to mention something that hasn't been said, and it's coming up in December, Barbados will be going through a very important process reviewing your constitution, and you'll be doing consultations around that. That is an excellent opportunity for your country to begin these discussions and how you want to enhance these systems and tackle and discuss these very important questions around current security and justice.
Thank you. Sandy, quick over to you. You're muted. Well, Sandy gets unmuted. My solutions. Teach one.
Mm-hmm.
Grab somebody, grab your neighbor, grab a friend, a brother or sister, and try to pull them along with you.
Right.
Sometimes they're going to pull back, so they might pull you down. So you've got to be very careful too, you know.
You've got to be strong.
You've got to be strong because it's easy to say, it's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
So these people will drag you down with them if you allow them. So you got to pull them along and teach them. Sandy, you're still muted.
Oh.
What about you? What are your solutions?
I completely agree with you. Each one, teach one, and we should be good to go. And I also think that the institutions which are out there need to use all the tools which are available, social media, whatever. Present what you're trying to teach people in a way that is more appealing to them. Don't do the same old way. It's not 1998 anymore. That's basically it. And that has been it for Fighting Crime, Discussing Solutions to Crime and Violence, Episode 3. We will be back again next week, 6:30, here on VOB 92.9 FM and Hot 95.3 FM. I'm your host, Scott LaRock Headley, saying goodnight.